It is time for your KDNK local newscast for this Friday morning, September 2nd. I'm Steve Cole. A new study by Colorado State University researchers is the first of its kind to put hard numbers to the health impacts of oil and gas industry pollution. Eric Galatis reports.
Analysis by researchers at Colorado State University found oil and gas sector pollution is responsible for more than 750,000 asthma attacks annually in U.S. children under age 18. The Clean Air Task Force Commission study is the first of its kind to quantify health impacts of ground-level ozone produced by the industry. Hilda Nusete with the conservation group Protegete, Our Air, Our Health, says ozone causes kids to miss almost 15,000 school days each year in Denver alone.
So we know that methane leaks from oil and gas facilities are directly increasing ozone smog levels, meaning we are creating worse air quality for our kids to breathe, and that is increasing those asthma attacks in our communities.
The study says oil and gas production releases more than 9 million tons of methane and other pollution annually and is currently the largest source of methane emissions in the U.S. Researchers note methane, the primary component of natural gas, is 87 times more potent than carbon dioxide at trapping heat in the atmosphere. Janice Nolan with the American Lung Association says hotter summers are intensifying ozone levels, creating dangerous air conditions, especially for kids playing outdoors.
Children whose lungs continue to develop after they're born and develop until they are teenagers or young adults, their lungs can be shaped by the amount of ozone pollution that they're breathing. They can, in fact, have their lungs function less well, so that puts them at risk for lung diseases as they get older.
In June, the EPA finalized methane standards for new oil and gas production, but Nolan says the rules don't cover more than a million existing facilities. The agency has committed to issuing guidelines for existing sites with the highest ozone levels in the near future. People can access local data from the report through an interactive map at oilandgasthreatmap.com. This is Eric Galatis reporting for KDNK.
KDNK News Director Gavin Dahl interviewed Boulder Weekly editor Joel Dyer back in May when the state Supreme Court ruled that Longmont's fracking ban and the five-year moratorium in Fort Collins were unconstitutional. Now that new proposed fracking regulations have failed to make the November ballot, it's time to revisit the conversation about power, profit, and politics in Colorado.
Joel Dyer is editor of Boulder Weekly, the only newspaper in the state with five straight years of growth. In addition to running the paper, he's both investigative reporter and watchdog columnist. Thanks for speaking with KDNK, Joel.
Oh, it's nice to talk to you.
Your paper won 13 first place awards from the Society of Professional Journalists in the Top of the Rockies contest covering Colorado, New Mexico, Utah, and Wyoming. You took first place for political enterprise reporting. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Your story behind the curtain really blew a lot of people's minds. Most folks in the mountains don't know about it. Can you talk a little bit about your story?
Yeah, you know, it started out with a core request to the Lead School of Business at CU here in Boulder. And I started following the money and the connections of who was really behind these oil and gas reports that were coming out of the Lead School. Ultimately, at the top of the map, I ended up at a lobbying organization called Colorado Concern, which is a invitation-only organization of the 118 or so super wealthy largest corporations in the state. They were the ones who sort of dictate policy. And so I started mapping all the connections and found that this organization, Colorado Concern, was made up of both Democrats and Republicans, funders of both parties, but their website was very clear. Their primary interest was making sure that fracking remained unfettered. It just sort of pulled the curtain back from the way that the state of Colorado runs on oil and gas. And what it really said was oil and gas dictates what happens in the state of Colorado. That's the short answer.
I asked you to do a news brief with me because of your piece in Boulder Weekly about the state Supreme Court deciding to overturn Longmont's ban on fracking and the five-year moratorium up in Fort Collins. You write about becoming more disturbed the further you read through the opinion. Explain why you report, quote, the hypocrisy contained in the pages of these rulings is boundless.
It's a really interesting ruling. The oil and gas industry and their political operatives who like the ruling have come out and said, well, they found that the state preempts local law and that the state's the only one who has control over oil and gas. That's not at all what the Supreme Court said. That's wishful thinking. The Supreme Court actually found that local communities do have the right to use land use and zoning when it comes to oil and gas. And the state does have the right to regulate oil and gas. So you're saying, oh, there's a conflict here. And the way that the Supreme Court sorted it out was to say, so you can only use your local regulations as long as they are supportive of the state's goals. They have to work in conjunction with the state's goals. And that's what this ruling really turned on, to maximize as much production as you can while not allowing waste, to stop as much waste as you can. They're saying that if they were to develop this formation outside of the city limits, but they couldn't do it within, they'd be wasting oil and gas that were under the city because they couldn't get those out, and that would go against what they determined were the state's goals. And when you start breaking down who the state is based on this Supreme Court decision, you find the state is Governor Hickenlooper, a majority in the of the 100 people that make up the legislature, and then you get into the wealthiest companies in the state of Colorado, the wealthiest campaign donors in the state of Colorado. The state is not us. Since the state just found that one of the state's goals is to prevent waste, well, we know that 10% of methane leaks from wells and pipes and actually drilling. So what if a city were to say, in the name of state's goals, you can no longer waste anything. You can no longer flare gas. You can no longer allow gas to escape. That could be a way that cities could be saying, we're in line with state's goals, but the oil and gas industry can't meet those goals, so therefore they can't drill. I mean, I think there's a lot of things to be fought in court over the coming years.
And yet other state courts in Washington and New York have ruled that states have a legal obligation to preserve air and water.
Yeah, and this court could have ruled that for Colorado. There is enough on the books in the state of Colorado as far as protecting, you know, quality of life and protecting the environment, that the courts could have taken into account that virtually all scientists not being paid by the oil and gas industry or coal industry agree that global warming is real, hydrocarbons contribute to it, and that we are going to pass a point of no return. You know, at some point, Gavin, what we have to do, at some point, we have to start calling things what they are. If you have a governor or you have a mayor, you have anyone else who says, I am an environmentalist, I want to keep things good, but we have to produce as much hydrocarbons as humanly possible. That person is a climate change denier. It doesn't matter if they wrap that in some green words. If you are saying that we have to produce all of the hydrocarbons and not waste those hydrocarbons, you're saying that you don't believe that doing that is going to destroy the planet. And that makes you a climate change denier, and it makes you in opposition to the vast, vast majority of all the science that's going on in the world today. Right now, we have a political system that is completely separated from the people that it's supposed to be serving.
Joel Dyer, Boulder Weekly, winner of 13 first place awards from the Society of Professional Journalists. Thanks so much for speaking to Katie and Kay.
Yeah, no problem. It's nice to talk to you, Gavin.
Thank you, Gavin. And from our breaking news department, the Garfield County Sheriff's Office announced Thursday night that DNA evidence and interstate law enforcement collaboration has led to the arrest in Texas of two suspects in a no-name stabbing 1 year ago. Delbert Wilford and Amy Kent will be returned to Garfield County to face charges by the 9th Judicial District. General election is Tuesday, November 8th, now only 67 days away. All ballots will be sent to active voters by mail, and the Garfield County Clerk Jean Alberico says it's time for voters who may be traveling in November and college students away at school to make sure their ballots get to the right address. KDNK's Amy Haddon Marsh has more.
There's a special category for voters who cast their ballots when they're away from home. Jean Alberico calls it UOCAVA, and it stands for the Uniform and Overseas Absentee Voter Act. These people are registered to vote in Garfield County, but they won't be here for the election.
Anybody who's uniformed, which means in the military, or their dependents, and anyone else who is overseas temporarily, maybe vacationing, living temporarily, going to school out of country, or someone who lives permanently overseas now.
UOCAVA ballots have to be mailed out 45 days before the election. That means these voters have until September 24th to make sure Alberico and her staff in Garfield County have the correct address.
The ballots by law are required to have return service requested on them, so they cannot be forwarded. So if you're not at home, they're going to come back to us.
If that happens, there's no guarantee the ballots can be mailed out again in time to vote. So here's what you need to do if you're a UOCAVA voter.
They need to go online at govotecolorado.com. They can pull up their voter record, and there are options on there for where you would like your ballot mailed. So you can currently see what we have as your mailing address, and if you're going to be temporarily away, you can give us an alternative mailing address.
Or in Garfield County, you can call the Garfield County Clerk's Office.
You know, if people are going to be traveling and it's going to be iffy whether they're going to be someplace where they can get the ballot or something, they need to call the staff, because maybe before they leave they can get a ballot, or we can figure out an address to get it to.
As for college students, Alberico says parents can be a problem if the student's ballot arrives at home. Her advice is to resist the urge to become a surrogate voter for your child.
When the ballots start coming back in to be processed and counted, one of the steps is that every voter's signature has to be verified.
That means teams of election judges have to compare the signature on the ballot with the one on record. If they don't match, the voter gets a letter.
And we send them what's called a signature discrepancy letter, and the voter can verify, yes, I did or did not vote that ballot, and return that affidavit with a copy of their ID, and we will continue to process that ballot for them. If you don't return the affidavit, then of course we can't process the ballot.
In short, there's a good chance that despite all the effort, the vote won't count.
You know, one ballot, one vote, and the person who sent that ballot needs to vote that ballot.
Ballots for college students who are not living at home will be mailed out on October 17th. For KDNK, I'm Amy Haddon Marsh.